Matt Bobala with you here. 720 WGN 312-981-7200 is the number. Joining us on the phone right now is our friend Sonia Van Meter. She is at Bourbon Face on Twitter. Hopes someday to be a Martian, but she's an opposition researcher based out of Texas. Where did I hear you? What's going on, Sonia? My producer just said you had a bad night tonight.
Dude, you're not going to believe this. I'm just now realizing that somebody broke into my car.
That sucks. At your house?
Dude, at my house. In front of my place, man.
That's the worst.
I know. Like, now, I will say this. It looks like the only thing they got are some really nice Ray-Bans that I totally love, and they were only a few months old. But, that's what's up.
So there's no, broken window, anything like that?
No, that's what's screwy. I wondered, did I not lock my car door? Because the door was still open. It was slightly ajar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what's going on. That's my night.
Now, are you sure that you weren't just in a rush to get home and you didn't quite close your door and maybe your Ray-Bans are inside on the kitchen table?
No, there's a couple other things. I had a bag of clothes that I was, honestly, a bag of clothes I was going to take to Goodwill in my back seat, and they are gone.
Man, the thing that stinks, so nothing bad happened. I mean, there's Ray-Bans that sucks. You got to spend money to replace those. But it's just the feeling of there's some jerk near me who maybe sees my house, whatever. That drives you insane.
Yep. And I mean, kind of a mess. I opened up my glove compartment and threw out a bunch of stuff and kind of just spread trash.
Now, maybe you've been talking enough smack about the president that he's got people in black helicopters that are swinging by just to check up on you.
Dude, let me tell you something. the level of smack that I am talking and the frequency of smack that I'm talking does not merit the kind of black ops. The president's got far bigger problems than me, let me tell you.
Well, maybe this wasn't a big black ops project. Maybe you just called some dude in Austin and said, hey, just swing by our house and rifle through the glove compartment, see what's going on. Stir her up a little bit.
Man. Well, I would like to think I'm that important.
He would have a lot of people doing a lot of that. That's how he's saving the economy, maybe.
Oh, is that what's going on? Okay, cool.
There'd be hundreds of thousands of jobs created just to, stir up trouble with the people that are causing him trouble. So let's get right into that. Did you read any of Michael Wolff's book yet?
Only the clips that made it onto the internet.
I downloaded it today because it was unavailable in the local bookstore, and I've read about 20% of it, and I find it fascinating. I wish Michael Wolff was a little different. As I see the interviews he does, I think he's hurting his own credibility a little bit, but it's a fascinating read.
Oh, it's glorious. It's so juicy. I especially love the fact that there were certain, little satirical pieces that made it onto the internet that were supposed to be excerpts from his book that were actually total fiction, things that people were just making up. And they were so outrageous and so ridiculous. And yet we were still kind of I don't know. I mean, it could be that Trump really, really loves watching gorillas fight each other on TV. And people believed it. We are so deep into, we're so far through the looking glass that we don't know what to believe anymore.
For people that aren't familiar with this, I saw this online earlier tonight. Somebody wrote, was it a guy from The New Yorker who wrote the parody piece? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. So I have no idea.
Somebody wrote a parody piece. I caught it when he apologized for it and said, boy, now I'm part of the problem because people believe this. He wrote a parody that it was an excerpt from the book that Trump wanted. It was his first night in the White House or whatever, was upset that they weren't getting the Gorilla Channel. Where's the Gorilla Channel? So aides quickly pasted together a bunch of different movies or gorilla shows, and then from a transmitter on the South Lawn beamed the Gorilla Channel into his room, after which he got upset that there wasn't enough fighting. Now, what's funny about this, though, Sonia, is that then I saw another story. Somebody came out later tonight, I think, and said, while that is funny and amusing, here's a true story that they were traveling with Trump on a plane. I don't think it was Air Force One, but they started screening some movie. I don't know what it was, but probably a more serious movie. After 20 minutes, Trump was bored. So they put in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and he made, I think it was Bloodsport. And then he made one of his sons keep fast forwarding to the fighting so he could cut the 2-hour movie down to about 45 minutes. And that's not that much different than the gorilla story.
It's really not, we don't know what to believe anymore. I can't believe this is the universe that we're living in.
Well, it's fascinating. So whether you love or hate Trump, And I know the people that love Trump are not going to believe a word of the book and just be upset about it. But it is a mm-hmm. fascinating insight just into, take Trump out of it. All the other people in the circles and they're battling for their positions. And the whole first part of the book is how everybody was positioning themselves for their jobs after this was over, because nobody believed they were actually going to win, except for Steve Bannon. He's the only one that kept saying, we're going to win this thing. It's fascinating. We'll talk more about it later. I want to ask you about, you tweeted earlier tonight about Kristen Gillibrand. There was a story, I forget if it was, I was just reading, I think the Beast, the Daily Beast, or somebody did a story about, is she hurting her chances for 2020? And you wrote, you wrote something along the lines of, is this what we're really going to start doing? Was that about, were you calling them out on it being a female candidate, or why were you taking umbrage with their writing about Kristen?
I believe it was a comment to the effect of, she is too opportunist, which is something that we loved. We did it for years to Hillary Clinton. It was about her being too hungry, too ambitious, and something that we love to do to women running for major office. You know, we see it really frequently. We've seen these arguments about Kamala. We've seen these arguments about Elizabeth Warren. And you know what? In this era of Me Too, in this time where we're seeing women really come forward and talk about, you know, what their experience is like in politics, in the real world, in their everyday lives, I am absolutely 1,000% done with dude bro journalists talking about women as though they're asking for something that they don't deserve.
Okay, now, I didn't read the whole piece. Well, I read almost, I didn't read the whole piece, but they also mentioned Mitt Romney and John Kerry as people in a similar vein who do these type of things. I mean, the story is about how she championed her NRA connections at a time. Did she rush too fast to push Al Franken out of the Senate? I mean, there is a thing, if we take sex out of it, let's take sex out of it just for a minute. I understand you're being upset about because of the way women and because of what Hillary faced. If we take sex out of it and it's just a political candidate who, you know, there is such a thing, absolutely, I think you would agree, of candidates who jump on opportunity too quickly and maybe then alienate people or maybe you would say, hey, those guys get elected all the time. That's just how it is. Or would you say there is an issue for candidates who do things like that, who, you know, on the one hand are touting their NRA connections, but then when it's not as beneficial to them, are doing something on the opposite end?
My issue is that you don't see stories written. You don't see think pieces written about dudes being opportunistic. The word that they use to describe those dudes is aggressive, you know, or calculating, perhaps. It's always women. It's always women being attacked for being opportunistic. You know, wasn't Mitt Romney in the headline? It was her.
Yeah. Well, because Mitt Romney's like, done, though, right? I mean, we're not talking about Mitt Romney in 2020. So if it was...
Buddy, I don't know. Here's the thing, though. Running for political office is all about the opportunity. Like, that's the whole point.
Right.
Like, it's, and I'm tired of it, man. I'm really, like, it smacked so hard of the same nonsense we saw thrown at Hillary Clinton about how, oh, she's just power hungry. She's just getting greedy for, you know. Man, where did those stories have all been written? You know, write something new. You know, wow, did she jump a little bit early on calling for Franken's resignation? I mean, those are stories that I'm willing to entertain and listen to and debate. You know,
what do you think? I totally understand. I totally get it. Let's talk about Al Franken for a minute. Not Kristen's role in it, but just the whole him resigning as quickly as he did. Him saying at first, I want an ethics investigation. I embrace that, and then deciding to resign as he lost Democratic support, not just among Kristen, but among many male Democrats as well. Dick Durbin called on him to resign here in Illinois. A lot of them came down heavy on him. What do you think about that? Did the Democrats? Was that the right thing to do, and was it the smart thing to do politically?
Whew, that is a multi-layered question right there. On the one hand, you know, speaking as a Democratic operative, you know, and particularly as a woman, part of me wants to say that, yes, you know, we need to be the kind of party that lives and breathes its own values. We can't talk about being the party for women, the party of women, if we're not you know, taking seriously the rights and safety of women. On the other hand, you know, the political strategist in me, you know, kind of cringes a little bit because, you know, that's a seat that we need. And Franken legislatively has been a champion for women. And that's not to say that you can't advocate for women at the ballot box and in the halls of Congress and not still be, you know, a jerk, a misogynistic jerk in your private life. But, you know, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I'm not conflicted about this. I mean, there's a lot yeah. going on here. So, you know, I don't fault anyone for thinking what they do. I have a lot of people who are adamant that this was the right thing, that he needed to go. I've got a lot of friends who, you know, loved him, who worked with him, who saw him champion women's causes in the Senate and are sad to see this to go down the way that it did. And I'm not going to tell anybody they're wrong.
Yeah, it's I would think it's really tough because, like you said, he did champion women's causes. And if the Democrats then lose that seat, theoretically, that hurts women's causes, at least from the Democratic side. So it's a very tough one. You know, Matt Damon has gotten himself in a lot of trouble trying to parse the differences in behavior among men who have behaved badly. And Al Franken is one of the ones where you'd say, all right, that was really stupid. That was really sophomoric. Should there be a dividing line or some sort of degree of what people have done and how much trouble that gets them into? And, because when you say, if Democrats are going to fight this cause, it's the Michelle Obama, they go low, we go high. So if one of our people did it, they should be forced out. But at the same time, that seems to be how Republicans keep winning these battles. Now, Roy Moore did lose. And I was stunned. I would have bet the house that he was going to win that election. That was a huge surprise that night. But outside of that, it seems like Democrats or Michelle Obama's proclamation, when they go low, we go high, keeps backfiring on Democrats. Maybe that was the turning of the tide and maybe it will pay off in the end. But do you sometimes worry that Democrats don't fight hard enough and don't fight back hard enough, that taking the high road, while in theory is the right thing to do, isn't the thing that works out best for the team?
That's another multi-layer.
I'm very multi-layered tonight, Sonia. I'm making this difficult on you, I know. Very multi-layered. 2018, more layers.
Hey, let me tell you something. I appreciate it. You know, it's like a nuanced discussion is you know, after a year of this White House, anything resembling nuance, I'm a huge fan of. You know, so, like, not everything is black and white, and I appreciate that. That's a tough question. To your concern that the Democrats don't fight hard enough. The funny thing is that I believe that we do fight hard enough. We just don't necessarily fight smart enough. Mm. You know, in terms of, you know, getting rid of a guy like Al Franken, you know, it's a complicated issue for sure. On the other hand, I think Doug Jones won precisely because the Democrats fought the kind of fight that we needed to fight, and stood fast on certain values that you can't turn your back on if you really believe in them, you know? So given the climate and given everything that has happened so far, the simultaneous Donald Trump era happening with the Me Too uprising, I think that more often than not, this is going to play to Democrats' advantage. It's hard. It's hard to live your values when it can potentially sacrifice you seats. But I think that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say this. So I have this theory, right? We need our next Jimmy Carter. We're looking for politicians who are decent. We are so sick and so grossed out by so much of the scandal coming out of this White House that I think people who are just straight up good human beings are going to go really, really, really far in 18. Now, for the most part, that's going to mean Democrats because, you know, unfortunately, Republicans are having to kind of toe party line, and, you know, the leader of their party is their president right now. For better or for worse for them. But I think, you know, in 18 and even in 20, the Democrats walking the walk and living the sort of, you know, party line truth is going to work out really, really well. I thought I knew what I was talking about in 16, so you don't necessarily want to take my word for it.
Well, everybody seemed to miscalculate that one, even the people that are sitting in the White House right now. So we have to, everybody gets a mulligan for that one, I guess. As we start looking ahead to the midterms coming up this year, where do you see things at right now? The Democrats currently with Doug Jones taking over that Senate seat, or it's a what, 51-49 now, right? Or is it 50? How does it 50-49-1? How is it working exactly right now? Because it was 50.
51.
It's,
yeah, I believe it's
51-49. So it's two votes, but it's one. If one flipped, it would change things. But the Democrats have some tough seats up, including Al Franken's seat, which will be up for election again, and some other ones. They only need two, but I think you have some tough races to defend. And in the House, it's a decent amount that Democrats have to make up. So how are things looking right now as far as the candidates that are out there? You said that good people will go a long way. How easy is it to get those people to jump into the idea of running for public office? Because it is a tough game these days.
It is a tough game these days, but I'll tell you what, if Donald Trump has done anything for the Democratic Party, it's that he's galvanized us completely. So, first of all, and here I am in Texas, so we'll talk about Texas. For the first time in, I think, 20 years, we have competitive races in all of our congressional districts. There have been places where we didn't even have a Democrat on the ballot. And all of a sudden, we have competitive primaries in every single congressional district in the state. It's been years since that happened, and we're seeing that all over the country. People are stepping up to run. People are exhausted. They're upset. They're motivated. They're energized. And they're raising money. They're out there getting their message out. And I'm clear the tide is the Democrats. And the nice thing is that it's not just politician types running anymore. You know, usually we get a sea of lawyers and business executives and such. Now all of a sudden we've got doctors running. We've got accountants running. We've got teachers running. You've got public personalities and radio DJs running, FYI. We've got this huge variety of people with all kinds of experience from all walks of life running for office. The other thing I'm really excited about, and I'm sure other people will confirm this, Emily's List, you know, the organization that likes to fund and back pro-choice Democratic women, saw a crush of interest right after the election. They have a website where you can go if you're interested in running for office and you're a woman. There's a get more information, contact us, let us know website where you go, you fill in some information. They're used to getting 20 or so a month. Their website crashed in the week after the election because so many women were interested in running at all levels. It was local, it was statewide, it was federal. And they only back Democratic women. So, there's been this massive crush of Democratic talent where in times before, our bench has been a little bit lacking.
Well, do you know that? So that was right after the election, a crush of interest. Has that panned out to mean that women are running in greater numbers in 2018? Do you expect to see women running? I know I can't get too deep into local and state races, of course, but on a national level, do you expect to see really competitive races with a lot more women than you normally see?
Absolutely. As a political consultant myself, for the first time in my life, I am working for just as many female candidates as I am male candidates, and that's never happened before.
Yeah, I believe it. So
we're coming up, baby.
All right, Sonia, I know it's late, and I know you just had your car broken into, but we got to do the news. Can you hang on a few more minutes? Because I really want to get your opinion on something I've been saying for a while, and that's the debate over whether President Trump ever leaves office and what happens if he does and how the Democrats would feel about that. Can you hang on just for a few?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
All right. Sonia is going to straighten out her glove compartment while she waits. We'll take a quick break and then get Roger's news headlines. And then we'll chat more with Sonia Van Meter at Bourbon Face on Twitter. A worthwhile follow. That's coming up next. 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show. 720 WGN. Sonia Van Meter, Bourbon Face on Twitter, is a Democratic opposition researcher. She's been kind enough to stick on the phone with us a little while longer. Sonia, I know your car got broken into tonight, but I don't know if you just heard the weather report. It's zero here right now. Zero.
You know, I did hear that. That's terrifying. That is terrifying.
So maybe our cars are in one piece, but it's zero. So there's that.
Yeah, no. I'll never again complain about my situation. Like, I lost some Ray-Bans and that sucks, but like, I'm not frozen and it's fine.
Yes. So you've got that going for you. So that's good.
All right.
I want to ask you about this. I've had a theory that I've talked about a little bit on the show, because there's been a lot of talk about the 25th Amendment or Russian collusion or what's going to happen with the Mueller investigation, yada, 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 and about Trump ever leaving office. And my theory is that Democrats do not want him to leave office. Doug Jones might have only won because Trump is in office. The 2018 midterms are going to theoretically be helped by Trump being in office. And the other problem is, if Trump leaves office, Mike Pence takes over, who is a nightmare for Democrats policy-wise, but also is going to run probably a more orderly White House and bring back a sense of government that might actually get him reelected, or at least get a lot more legislation passed on an agenda that Democrats really don't want. I think the best thing for Democrats is for Donald Trump to be in office as long as possible.
I mean, that's one theory for sure. And as we've talked about tonight, like, Donald Trump has done a lot for Democrats in terms of, you know, just being the gift that keeps on giving. You know, every time he opens his mouth, we can fundraise. Any policy position he has, you know, we can fundraise on that, and we can motivate voters with that. But you know, the other thing is, and I don't like, I know that it's really easy to get cynical in a time like this, but I mean, while he does motivate and galvanize the other side of the aisle, he's also, I mean, this is straight up dangerous territory for us as a country. You know, the scandals are fun, and it's easy to laugh at and sort of point and roll your eyes at certain things. But at the end of the day, we're still talking about a White House and an executive branch that is so open to attack from enemies, both foreign and domestic. And I don't mean to be alarmist about this, but we're talking about an administration that has no idea what it's doing. And the way that they carry out their business, you know, out in front of people, he's talking shop in Mar-a-Lago, moving from table to table, talking about national security and talking about foreign policy and talking about his domestic agenda in conversations that should be happening behind closed doors. We are, I don't think we've ever been as vulnerable to our enemies as we are right now. And so, yes, from a political standpoint, I think Democrats do benefit from having him in office. But at the same time, I can't feel like a patriot with the situation that we're in. Like, I there's something about having him here that makes me fear for my country in a way that I had never feared for my country before. You know, George H.W., any Republican leadership we've ever had before, I have never felt that they didn't have the best interest of the country at heart. For the first time in my life, I feel that way. So, and I think a lot of Democrats feel that way. I think that's part of the reason that everyone is so motivated to run, and that we're talking about 2020 so early, and we're feeling such a huge candidate pool for 2020. So yes and no. You know, as with everything else we've talked about tonight, you know, there's kind of two sides to it.
Yeah.
Mike Pence is terrifying to me personally from a political perspective, sure. And I think he would run a much more orderly White House. But I think from a policy perspective, he is even more dangerous than Trump, just because I think he would be more effective at having legislation passed. There's not that level of fear. There's not that component of chaos to him. On the other hand, and this is very insider baseball, I know, his colleagues, who, you know, people who have worked with him before, say that he's not especially a smart guy, a smart man. Apparently, his nickname for a really, really long time was Mike Dent. So perhaps he's not the great strategic threat that some people sort of think.
Well, here's the thing, though, Sonia, and here's the big difference, I would guess, especially as I'm reading the beginning of this book, and I think you would agree with this, that maybe the biggest mistake and maybe not, people who defend Trump would probably argue against this, but his whole mantra was, I'm going to drain the swamp. And so he comes in, surrounds himself by family, surrounds himself with kind of outsiders, doesn't let people who truly know what they're doing run the show. They write about Henry Kissinger placing a lot of calls to give advice. And it's like, get somebody who really knows what they're doing, get somebody as chief of staff who really knows what they're doing. And instead, he kind of, you know, he wanted one of his real estate buddies to be chief of staff and really tried to get him. And the guy's like, dude, I'm just too rich. I can't untangle myself. I don't want to do this. And so, you know, everything is kind of bounced around in there. And while in some ways you're going to argue he didn't drain the swamp, look at Betsy DeVos and all these people, he's just bringing in a different swamp. He has not surrounded himself with people who knew Washington enough to help him really get things done. And while you might say, oh, Pence, he doesn't really know what he's doing, he was a governor of a state, he ran a state, whether the state likes that or not, now he's you know, a heartbeat away. And theoretically, at least, he would surround himself by the right people and he would work with the Republican Party, not just throw Twitter jabs at him at 3 a.m. And so whether he's smart or not, you could argue, but he's going to have everything in place to get things done if they don't, in 2018, lose control of the houses.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, there's absolutely something to that. You know, by comparison, Pence is an incredibly disciplined individual. And you're right. I mean, Trump, you know, he led on the premise of I'm gonna drain the swamp, and instead he just made it thicker and higher and deeper. But part of the problem is that right now we're living in such an era of chaos that it's really kind of hard to speculate at this point. And I say that as a person who is, you know, it's my job to speculate for a living. I feel like this is all so chaotic, and that we're sort of like in the movies where you see something happens and it skews the timeline. We're now living in this weird sort of alternate timeline. So from here on out, I feel like it's sort of anyone's guess. But I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe he is the bigger threat. But at this point, I gotta think that Trump has done so much to tarnish the Republican brand that Democrats in 18 and 20 are going to see massive, massive gains. And hopefully that means the White House.
Well, and generally you do see massive gains 2 years after a president takes, right? I mean, I believe for President Obama, I believe for President Clinton, I'm going to guess for the Bushes, that they take office with control. 2 years later, generally you lose control. That is the trend, right?
Yep, absolutely. Big time.
So theoretically that would happen anyways, at least Democrats would make gains. Now, they have a long way to go to gain control of the House. Do you think that can be done in 2018?
Okay, again, you're asking me to predict, and like all
yes.
I can think of is how I thought I was so right in 16 and I could not have been more wrong.
Well, you don't even have to predict whether it's going to happen, but just tell me, I think isn't it 35 seats in the House that they would have to flip?
Yeah, it's more than that.
Something around there, something in the high 30s. So that's a large amount. Just looking at the races right now, in the ones they have to defend and the ones they have to gain, theoretically, is it? Yeah, we're pretty. You know, I know you're not saying, hey, it's definitely going to happen, but are they at least looking competitive in enough of those races where, if you put it all on the board, yeah, there's scenarios where the Democrats do gain control.
Yes. I think it's possible. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I've had misplaced optimism before, and I can't bear another heartbreak the way that I did in 16. But yes, it's absolutely doable. I mean, the PDIs are swinging like crazy all over the country. You know, districts that used to be hard right are now lean right. Districts that used to be lean right are now, you know, toss up. Talked about, you know, we've seen a lot of competitive races in terms of the Democratic primaries. It's no longer, oh, here's the sacrificial lamb for this district, here's the person we're going to put on the ballot just so we have someone. Now we've got competitive primaries with real, with really talented candidates, people with lots of experience, lots of interesting, useful, varied experience, bringing all kinds of stories to Congress. I think if ever there was a year for us to really overperform, I think it's probably 18. So, you know, I'm not saying quote me on that, because like I said, I've been wrong before, but all signs point to this is going to be a crushing year for Democrats in the good way. So.
And the crazy thing is it's in 2018. We're already in 2018. So we're only like 9 months away.
You got it.
Or so from things really. I mean, we're going to start seeing ads soon. We're really going to start hearing about this. This year is going to be pretty full of politics, isn't it? Is the money being raised going to be at record levels? Are you seeing money pouring into Democrats and the Democratic National Committee at record rates?
Absolutely. It's already at record rates, and it's just going to get better and better, I believe, going forward. And the great thing is that even like relative to Republican spending, Republicans are not raising money. There is not the enthusiasm on that side of the aisle. There are certain pockets where, of course, they're always going to do well. But nationally, the Democratic candidates are absolutely crushing it on fundraising. It's been really, really exciting to watch. Even with these Democratic primaries where there's multiple candidates running. And I know the Democratic donors are super tapped out right now. But the great thing is that we're no longer relying on the major, major donors. Grassroots donations are coming in like a flood. It's been great to watch, and I'm really excited to see what these candidates how these candidates are able to compete and how they're able to get their message out with all this ad money behind them. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be rowdy.
Ron is in Michigan. He dialed 312-981-7200. Ron, you got a comment for Sonia?
Yes, I do, Matt. It's below Sonia. Sonia, it doesn't make any difference, in my opinion, if we have the smartest candidate or the most, as long as that fan base, which is what we have with Trump, and it's loyal, and they come out and they vote. We had allegedly the smartest guy in office, President Obama. He had that 2-year window. He should have rammed everything through the 160 judges. Now that Trump gets to pick the infrastructure, ram it all through. But he wanted to play kumbaya. He wanted to play kumbaya. He wanted to make friends. And now what do we have? Anything that Obama has put in office is legislation. It's going to be dust. Everything except the medical thing. The 160 judges, it's unthinkable. He didn't lead our party. He led the party from the back. He didn't support unions, his main supporters. When the teachers union was out on strike, he didn't back them. He didn't get anything for Illinois. He didn't get an airport. We don't need a smart guy. We need a guy who's tough and who can bring in the base. That's what we need. Obama was an utter failure. He was the best.
Whoops. All right. I just screwed up. I'm so sorry, Ron. I just screwed up. Sonia had gotten cut off. I just put her back on. I accidentally hung up on Ron while I did that. I didn't mean to do that. But Sonia, Ron, I apologize about that. I think you heard what he was saying, is that while you can say, oh, we've got the smarter people, we've got all this momentum, he says in the end, Trump has his base and he gets what he wants. And he believes that President Obama really blew his opportunity when he had control while he did. Your thoughts?
I think there's probably something to that. But I think, as we've talked about, like that's sort of something that happens to every president. You get elected, you get swept into office because you say the things that people want to hear. And then you have to play it safe. You kind of marshal your capital and utilize it where you can. I mean, Obama used his capital to push Obamacare through. And then after that, we had the massive crush swing back from Republican voters 2 years later. There's the question of, what you do with the office once you get it. And I think in a lot of cases, he's absolutely right. It doesn't matter if you have the stronger or the smarter or the better candidate. It's what do voters want right now? What are they feeling? And there's always going to be races where you have a massive nincompoop win over some of the most qualified people in the room. 2016 White House, perfect example of this. Picture-perfect example of this. And every once in a while, as a political consultant, I'm not going to lie to you, like, I feel like every once in a while I wonder, like, does what I do matter? Like, are the voters going to vote for the person that they feel like better represents them given the time and the circumstance and the situation that they're in? But at the end of the day, sometimes you get into office, you do what you can, and sometimes the voters like it and sometimes they don't. We'll see.
Rich brought up Barack Obama. So let me ask you, as we head into 2018, how involved do you hope President Obama or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders are in pushing candidates? Should they take a step back or should they be front and center trying to help out?
I think that Hillary and Bernie need to step all the way back. Take all the seats, ladies and gentlemen. And you know I love me some Hillary. She is my girl, ride or die for life. I am with her. But at this point, it's time for the next generation to get in there and do their thing. And I got to say the same thing for Bernie. I know that there's a lot of fervor behind the enthusiasm for him. But the man is 140 years old. You know, he's been in the Senate for longer than I've been alive. It's time for the new blood. I think there are certain pockets of the country where a Bernie endorsement would probably be useful. I think that's probably the same for Hillary, but she's a more polarizing figure. I know. To be quite frank, I think this is not a time to bring back the relics of the past age. We're in the new timeline. You know, it's time for the new blood. Just my thoughts.
And so in 2020, then you fully expect that neither Hillary nor Bernie will try again, correct?
No, I think Bernie will absolutely try again. I think Hillary is done.
Do.
I do. Oh, absolutely. I think he got a taste and I think he wants more. And there's going to be a lot of people around him right now telling him, oh, absolutely, you should absolutely run. This is your time. This is your year. I think Hillary is flat out done. I think it would. I can't fathom what it would take to convince her to run again. And I think she's earned a little peace and quiet at this point. I think she needs to hang out in Chappaqua and play with her grandkids and just read some good books for a while. I think that she has earned some time off. She has served her country extraordinarily. I can't imagine what it would take to convince her to run again. But Bernie, no, I think the fervor is still there. I think he's still feeling it. And how it is with candidates. I mean, you're constantly surrounded by people that believe in you and want you to run, and you hear that all the time, relentlessly. I think we're absolutely going to see Bernie on the ballot again in 2020.
And what about Joe Biden?
No idea, to tell you the truth. I know he's expressed some regret about not running in 16. But I also know that, his life has been tough, the last few years with the loss of his son. Yeah. And, he's not exactly a spring chicken anymore. And when I was talking before about, the old guard needing to step aside and make room for the new guard, I think Joe Biden, I think he falls in the glory.
Do you think Chelsea Clinton will ever start dipping her toes into politics? She's very good on Twitter. She's very good at fighting back with the trolls and just with, having great Twitter exchanges. I've really come to love Chelsea Clinton. And as crazy as that is, say, hey, how about a different Clinton running for office? I wonder if she would ever have the desire to do that.
I wouldn't fault her if she did. Clearly her entire family, has the gift, for public service. Say what you will about the Clintons, but they got a lot done for this country. They were, progressive together. I can't speak for Chelsea. And you're right. She does have some really, really great Twitter game. But I also think that the country is a little done with dynasties. Unless she turns out to, and I think she is charismatic. I think she is a great leader, and I would love to see her run. But I think that she's got her father's political savvy, and probably recognizes that her experience running for office is probably going to be more like her mother's than her father's. And I don't know why anyone would want to subject themselves to that.
Well, and I wonder, too, Bill Clinton, would he have survived the Me Too moment? Somehow Trump survives everything, so he did. Although it'd be interesting if the election and the Billy Bush tape had come out 1 year later, would Trump have survived that election? He deflected it at the time, but there wasn't the national movement that is going on right now. And maybe the national movement wouldn't have come to light had it not been for Trump being in office. I don't know. But I wonder how Bill Clinton as a politician would fare today with all the baggage he had around himself.
Oh, I think he'd be toast.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think he would have survived that at all. And that's, that's unfortunately a blight that Democrats are going to have to sort of live with for years to come. were so quick to turn a blind eye and to sort of, you know, sweep that under the rug and ignore it. And that's, you know, that was a failing on our part. But Trump is different. You know, in order to be taken down by something like this, you have to have a sense of shame. I think that Bill Clinton does. And I think that Trump is just not wired that way.
I do.
Absolutely.
I don't know. He fought. I mean, you remember when it was all coming out and he just fought and he lied to the people saying, you know, pounding his fist on that lectern, I did not have a relationship. And I know he's saying it was none of their business and that at the time, but I don't think he would have gone quietly like Al Franken. I think he would have stayed around like Donald Trump. But
I don't think he would have gone quietly. I think he would have gone down kicking and screaming. But I think that I don't think he would have survived that particular scandal in the Me Too era.
Well,
I think it would have been a blaze of glory for sure, but I don't think he would have survived.
So who is the next rising star in the Democratic Party? Is it Kamala Harris? Is it Cory Booker? Do we have somebody that we know right now, or is it a name that isn't a household name yet that's going to rise?
You know what? There are just so many people that are being talked about in terms of 2020 that it's really hard to say who the next great leader is going to be. I love Kamala. I think she's wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. But I'm also interested in some of these other candidates, these sort of lower profile candidates who made a bit of noise in 16 and spent the next couple of years building their profiles a bit. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, love that guy. Really great mayor, gay man. He ran for DNC chair. Like he's been making the rounds. He's been on the circuit talking about progressive values and what this country is great at and kind of getting back to the democratic roots. Jason Kander's been making some noise. He's been doing the circuit. I know there's been some buzz about Eric Garcetti, mayor of LA. There are a lot of people kind of in the buzz that I think could easily step up. And those are just the ones that I've heard of. I mean, there's I'm sure there are more that are coming down the pipeline that I haven't, I'm not seeing yet.
So the next superstar might not be out there just yet.
Might not be.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year, Sonia. I hope we can do this again. I hope under better circumstances. I know you'll be warm, but hopefully your car will be secure next time we chat. I really appreciate you staying up late with us. It's always fun to talk to you. Follow Sonia Van Meter on Twitter at Bourbon Faces. Is there anywhere else you want people to connect with you, Sonia?
No, that's my jam, Twitter.
All right. Sounds good. We'll follow you there. Thanks so much for being on, as always.
Thank you.
All right. Sonia Van Meter at Bourbon Face. Give her a follow on Twitter. We'll talk to her again. It's going to be an exciting year ahead.